as the primaries continue over in America, we'll switch on the telly for a bit of light relief. Or maybe not, as the case may be, as currently on Netflix, President Underwood is undergoing his campaign to maintain his leadership in House of Cards. But is the drama a match for the real deal? We'll ask Alice Vincent, arts and entertainment writer for The Telegraph. And as well as that, we'll have an ice-cold murder mystery in Icelandic series Trapped. And we'll take a look at how domestic violence is dealt with in the UK in a candid BBC documentary, Behind Closed Doors. That's all to come on today's edition of The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. Now, diehard House of Cards fans will surely have finished season 4 by now, which Netflix released at the beginning of the month. The online series, which sees Kevin Spacey and Robin Wright as the power-hungry President Underwood and First Lady, was a smash hit in its first season, but its success with the critics seems to have wavered ever since. Before we talk about it, however, let's have a listen.
You have no idea what it means to have nothing. You don't value what we have achieved. I have had to fight for everything my entire life.
I saw a future. Our future.
We had a future until you started destroying it.
Alice, I absolutely love the trailers for House of Cards. They're so creepy and unnerving. Now, I will be honest. I am a fan of House of Cards, quite a fan. I get very excited every time I watch it. I, through a variety of different reasons, have only managed to get through 2 episodes so far. You've made your way through the series. Tell me what do you think of it? Well, Don't disappoint me, please.
I'm not going to tell you any big secrets. I'm going to say that I think it's the darkest season yet.
Really?
Yeah, it's...
That is really saying something, actually, because yeah. House of Cards has ventured into some pretty dark territory already.
I think it's just that... I think more with regards to kind of his career, and without giving too much away, obviously before and even when he became president, it was like his upward trajectory. Okay, so it was Frank Underwood, you know, he was going to do this, he's going to do that. He put his hands down on the Oval Table, you know, and it was like...
What a moment.
Right, absolutely. And there was a kind of progress there, whereas now, you know, his marriage is falling apart. He's being shown for the man he really is. There are these huge kind of journalistic investigations going on. And some of that facade is coming away, which obviously we've always known about. But it's difficult because once you go up so high, there's only one way you can go. And that's the way that Frank Underwood is going.
Well, I guess that is an interesting sort of analogy you bring there, because looking at the real life presidential race at the moment, one might imagine that somehow real life has become even more crazy and extraordinary than the fictional version. But is there a sense in this series of House of Cards here that some of the things that seem to happen and not really have any consequences for Frank are starting to come back to haunt him? Are things starting to unravel in a very big way?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, without giving too much away, he's reaching his comeuppance. I think there are a lot of people out there. There have always been people who have been out there to get him, but I think definitely, I mean, I'm not going to make a big comparison to real life because it's fictional, but it's the same as when anyone has been in office for a long time and people are reassessing what's going on. And that has definitely happened. And thankfully, most of the real life politicians out there haven't done as Machiavellian deeds as Frank Underwood has.
They've been clever with the timing here, releasing it at the height of the US presidential race that's happening at the moment. But as we were saying, the reaction from critics has kind of cooled off steadily since season one.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? Is it fair to say that the series has kind of cooled down a little bit when compared to season one?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because if you look at kind of the Metacritic reports and stuff, it's still in the high 80s for satisfaction. People are still sitting down, watching this and reviewing it well. You said yourself you're still excited about it. But I think it's like any TV series. It's like Orange is the New Black or Girls. You know, we get used to it. Some people fade away after the first season, some don't. It's not new anymore and it's difficult to retain that interest. What's interesting with House of Cards is that it's always been really important in the kind of television industry. It was Netflix's first original drama. It won a load of Emmys. It was the first like non-broadcasted, regularly like show to win all those awards. And it's interesting to see what's happened in its path.
We've had a couple of new cast members added for this series as well. We've got Ellen Burstyn in there and Neve Campbell playing some significant roles too. Now, what are your thoughts on the way that the show comes together, though? Because, of course, it has been criticised for not really having the most cohesive way in which it brings together its stories. The last season seemed to have a lot of kind of threads that were just left there blowing in the wind. And I know that a lot of people have said that it seems to throw everything that it's got at the wall and then we'll just see what sticks.
Not pick up the pieces afterwards. Right, exactly. And I think what's been kind of season four's saviour is the fact that they've decided to delve into Claire's storyline, her background.
Robin Wright, absolutely tremendous.
I mean, I could just watch her all day. She's amazing.
Yes, agreed.
But in doing that, we've actually sort of, it's obviously previously always been about Frank, and now, you know, she's not just being First Lady anymore. She's really interesting. We learn about her background, and there is, as the season mounts, there is, you know, she really comes into her own. So yeah. I think that's a saving grace.
Absolutely brilliant news then. Well, all four seasons of House of Cards are available to watch on Netflix right now. If you haven't introduced yourself to it yet, you've got quite a bit of work to do, so best get onto that. Now, wrap up warm for our next program because it's a murder mystery, which is as chilly as it is chilling. Trapped takes place in a small Icelandic village where a murderer is on the loose and a storm is on the way. Alice, fill us in. What's going on here?
Okay, so it's a bit like somewhere between Nordic Noir and Midsummer Murders.
Interesting place to be.
Right, exactly. And who would have thought it works? It totally works. Trapped is, you know, the name is in the headline. We're in this tiny Icelandic village. For reasons untoward that we don't realise, a massive ferry comes in from Denmark. And this kind of police force, which are normally dealing with people parking the wrong side of the road, have suddenly got to deal with this disembodied corpse that they found in the sea. And the murder mystery plays out while there's a storm that has eclipsed the entire village. And so therefore, you know, the murderer is on the loose in this small, very, very contained, claustrophobic environment.
It sounds fascinating. Before I ask you any questions about it, though, let's hear a short clip from Trapped.
The nightmare has begun in one small town with no way in or out, even for the killer. Everyone's in danger. Everyone's a suspect. Everyone is trapped.
Interesting. I guess there are a lot of interesting themes going on here. It sounds like it's more of a murder mystery in the vein of The Killing, perhaps, than Fargo, as we've seen recently.
Right. But it's really interesting that you bring up both of those because, you know, both of them can be seen as real influences. The Fargo aspect, you've got that very kind of small, towny, humpkin-bumpkin kind of vibe going on among the, I mean, I guess you could call them townspeople, but It's shot in a place where there's only 1,000 people living itself, so it's strictly a village. And The Killing, yes, but The Killing was very much reliant on its urban environment and its, you know, clever Google mapping activity and cell phones and all of that. And, of course, the village is so remote that they've got no gadgets, no mobile phone signal. This is another reason behind the claustrophobia. So it is and it isn't both of those things. Nature plays a massive, massive part in Trapped.
Now, as you're saying there, nature plays a massive part. So Iceland is often known, I suppose, for its stunning icy landscapes. Do you think the series gives a good picture of how the country looks?
Yeah, it does. I mean, I wonder what the tourist board have to say about it, because you look at it and you're like, oh my goodness, that's beautiful. But at the same time, you're like, oof, I don't want to get trapped on a mountain. You know, in a snow blizzard, is this what Iceland is really like? You know,
disembodied people, not really interested
floating.
In
floating. You definitely get an idea of that rugged landscape, but it is nature is an extra character here, and it is a malevolent character.
Well, talk to me about how the series feels then when you're watching it, because often when we watch series that are imported from countries that we often don't see on our television screens, we can pick up a few differences there that I suppose they can feel so unusual and removed from what we're used to, that it can present a bit of a barrier for us to really get drawn in and really sucked into what's happening on the screen. How does that play out in this series?
Well, it's got, you know, it's a BBC 4 programme that's got, you know, more than a million viewers hooked onto seeing the finale last night. It's really kind of, well, it's snowballed, to use a really awkward pun. but it does feel different. But I think, you know, you watch it and you instantly try and make comparisons to weird tiny villages in the UK or wherever you're familiar with. And I think part of the appeal is that we've moved on a step now from the Nordic noir and the Scandinavian dramas to this landscape that not many people are familiar with, and that's part of the lure and the appeal and the way that that environment impacts on the characters we see.
So it sort of represents a bit of a maturation in this style of murder mystery then?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised if it sparks a few copycat shows.
Oh, that's always a bit contentious. Well, Trapped was released to Icelandic and Nordic audiences earlier on this year and is available on BBC 4 right now in the UK. Look out for it in France and Germany, where it's available on France 2 and ZDF, respectively. Now, Behind Closed Doors is a new BBC documentary which follows the Thames Valley Police's domestic abuse teams here in the UK over a 12-month period. It follows the stories of three women to explore the complex emotions that go hand in hand with a loved one turning violent and the way that the courts deal with the repeat offenders. Alice, does this documentary lift the lid on this kind of crime?
I think it does. It explains a lot of things which I think people didn't previously know and I think people didn't previously understand. So in the former category, it would be the fact that a lot of these offenders who, you know, really commit grievous and mentally destructive crimes just really don't really get valid punishment, and their victims are let down by the system. But I also think that it shows and it shines a light on why victims stay with the perpetrators for years and why women live in really violent situations.
What are your thoughts on how the sort of reporting aspect goes about? Because we often, I mean, I've watched a few documentaries in this style myself over the years, and often what perplexes me is the way that the police need to go through the reporting of the crime first. And it always seems to come down to a bit of a he said, she said style thing. And you look at them and you just think, my God, these situations, they just feel utterly hopeless.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, as obviously it's not an uplifting documentary. But there definitely is that kind of futility about it, because I'm really impressed with the documentary makers in the way that they've managed to document from the start to finish somehow with one of the women who incredibly, during a bout of 6 hours of beating from her partner, managed to call 999 and slid the phone under the bed so that 999 kind of got this real-time listening into this situation, sent police around there straight away. And they came, they must have had secret cameras or something, because they filmed that entire scene the minute the police turned up, the minute they put the partner in handcuffs. So we got, you know, direct access into that. But yes, there is he said, she said, but the women's injuries, they just speak for themselves. You know, when you're looking at a picture of a woman who's got a footprint on her face, you can kind of tell what's going on.
And how do you think that the documentary makers have gone about getting this sort of footage then? Because obviously it's one thing to tackle a subject that is just so ripe with content that needs to be explored and is so important, but at the same time, you need to somehow get that content in a way that will be stimulating to viewers and will keep them compelled and will keep them watching. How have the producers managed to come up with that?
Well, I think the art came in the fact that it was done over an entire year. So although the incidents take up a very dramatic and harrowing first part of the show, they then interview all these various charity workers and police workers and the victims themselves over the course of a year. And there are natural narratives there. You know, some of them, you know, there are the repeat offences and there are, you know, restraining orders that are broken and things like that. So I think it's the length of time and the depth of the interviews that are done.
Well, Behind Closed Doors aired on BBC One and is available now online. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Very special thanks to my guest, Alice Vincent. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. The show is produced by Holly Fisher and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. We will, of course, be back at the same time tomorrow when we'll be dialing up our New York Bureau Chief, Ed Stocker, who's currently over in Austin to see what's going down at South by Southwest. But for now, goodbye from me, and thanks very much for listening.